GM, welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we are here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. And this time around, I have one word, rails. Also another word, distribution, and another word, dinero. And this time around, we have on Sammy of Dinero, formerly Redacted, and he goes all into IPX ETH, not APX ETH, IPX ETH, their new institutional product. And fair warning, I am now part of the Dinero team. So as you'll see in this episode, I get really excited about this, and I just want everybody to have that in mind. And Kit did a great job of balancing this out, asking the hard questions.
Pulling you back in. Making
this the fair and balanced and unopinionated podcast that we all know and love. But Kit, what are your thoughts on this one?
Man, you took the word from me, distribution. But the second one would be yield abstraction and where Sammy thinks the future looks like. I think at the end, that was a very interesting point that he said.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about building new paths to, bring those people in, those institutions in. Rails, distribution, institutions. We get into it. But before we do, make sure you go ahead, hit that bell button, like, subscribe, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think on YouTube. Make sure you follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Flywheel Podcast. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here as always with Capital K. And this time around, we have returning to the show. It's been almost a year and a half, and so much has happened since. Hell, I've joined Dinero, formerly Redacted, and proudly wearing my hat here. We have on 0x Sammy, the founder of Dinero, and we have a lot to unpack here. And this is a major announcement we have on the horizon, and we're going to get right into it. So, Sammy, what up? What's good? Thank you for coming back on the show.
What's good?
Yeah. And Dinero now,
before we get into it, shouldn't we let the audience, those who are not in the know, to kind of know the lore of Sammy first? No?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay. All right. Kit, you can ask the question.
The lore. I just want to know, the lore of Sammy and how kind of he got into crypto. Because obviously, if you're anywhere in DeFi, you recognize the 0x Sammy tag and username, but you may not know the story behind that. So, yeah. Sammy, if you can kind of share with us a little bit about your path into crypto, and then obviously a little about Redacted, so that we can kind of tee you up
into Dinero.
Sure, you speak too highly of me, Kit. Yeah, for sure. So, basically, got started in the space a few years ago. And was helping Conflux Network originally, CFX, as an analyst there. And then got in more involved in the research space and joined Masari. And that's where I met my co-founder, Never. And we launched Redacted over 2 years ago now. In that time, we've been building DeFi primitives on chain, mostly focused around liquidity management. So we built Hidden Hand, we built Pyrex, and now we have lots of new exciting opportunities on the horizon, which led us to this Dinero pivot off of the backbone of this announcement that we're going to talk today. Also helping the Bear Chain guys with their launch and staying busy in the space.
Yeah, and can we go into this Dinero rebrand? What was the thinking behind it? And it's funny, right before I joined Dinero, I noticed that DeFi was growing up, and it was we were past our food farm days, we were past the ultra degen stuff. I mean, yeah, shit is still degen, but like not what it used to be. But like you kind of saw like DeFi growing up. And I think this is what Dinero is about. Like still saying true to the roots, but like recognizing that DeFi is growing up.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the Redacted brand also has a lot of people like associate the Redacted brand with being this very complicated down the rabbit hole DeFi protocol, which a lot of people just don't have the time or want to spend the time really researching. And the idea with the move to Dinero is it's sort of similar to, you know, if someone's new to it, something similar to the Ribbon to Avo like move, where we have this product, PXETH, which is part of a greater product rollout, which is Dinero. And we've picked up a lot of traction in it. We've pulled in tens of millions of TVL, lots of new chain expansions, this institutional product that we're talking about today. And I think for us, the opportunity and the total addressable market that comes with this product is it outperforms everything else that we've done in the past, to a point where it just makes sense for us to double down, triple down on this product specifically and leave all the complications in the past, you know, just have a clear, succinct offering that we can all get behind and highlight.
Yeah. And how would you describe Dinero in like two sentences? What's your Dinero pitch and how does it work right now? Like basically, like how does Dinero work?
Okay. Sorry. I think I cut out there. Can you repeat the question?
Oh, I said in like two sentences, can you give like your Dinero pitch? Like how would you describe Dinero in two sentences?
Dinero is the yield base plate of Ethereum, right? And what that means is, you know, we wanted to say something that's not too obscure, but also pretty succinct there. So the yield base plate of Ethereum, what is it? It's ETH staking yield that's abstracted away for the user, right? So we're building, obviously, our core LST protocol, PXETH. And the way we're designing this specific LST is designed in a way where the user who's using it most of the time with the current roadmap will not even know they're using PXETH, right? So they'll be using a branded version of the LST that we're working on with some L2s. They'll be using this institutional product, which we'll talk about today. A lot of other protocols and other players, even in the TradFi space, are building on top of PXETH, and then that's what serves to make us, you know, the base plate of this Ethereum yield.
Yeah, and sending you up with this institutional announcement, how would you view DeFi and the relationship between DeFi and institutions? Do you see, you know, institutions finally coming to DeFi, or like DeFi going to institutions? How would you view this dynamic right now?
I think the whole DeFi sector is in this odd space, right, where the right side of the curve tends to lean on and stick to more tokens that you see that are like, they stick to tokens that you see are more often backed by VCs, right? Infrastructure plays, layer ones, layer twos, sort of plays that don't necessarily have like a clear path to monetization, but do have a bit more of a TradFi angle to them, right? And on the left side of the curve, you have Solana meme coins, right? It's really as simple as that. And DeFi, it's a bit old. It's a bit older now as a concept, and it can't really be as fun as the Solana meme coins are, and it can't necessarily be as sophisticated or grand as the stuff that exists on the right curve is, right? So a lot of DeFi projects are just stuck, right? They're stuck in the middle of the curve, which is the last place you want to be. And
mid-curve,
exactly.
Mid-curve purgatory, not fun.
And you, because a lot of projects are stuck in this space, it's hard for them to open up to new distribution channels, right? And I think that at the same time, the specific sector is plagued with hacks. It's plagued with legal uncertainty. And it's plagued with, you know, a million things, right? And while I got into DeFi to be mostly focused on a decentralized alternative to financial systems, all of the stuff that everyone is in it for, I realized that in order to get beyond that sort of roadblock that the entire sector is stuck at, which is, you know, actually onboarding all that capital and users that everyone wants to onboard, I think the entire market has to take a bit of this. I won't say it's like a pivot, but I'll say it's take the back roads there. And the back roads there is what we're doing now, which is going the institutional route first, right? And I think that if we can properly execute on the institutional side of things and be able to get buy-in and support from a lot of these big names through the same product but a different vehicle, we'll be able to like prove that the system can scale and operate at a large enough size to onboard this institutional capital, which will help us in the long term focus on the retail product and prove that trustworthiness in the market, right? I think that the whole idea of DeFi is that people should be able to not trust a person, but they should be able to trust the system and the code itself, right? And I think you can only do so much in the current market to prove how resilient your protocol is. But I think you can always do efforts on top of the protocol that can prove that other market participants trust this code. And if we can do that successfully, then I think we're in a good spot to, you know, set ourselves aside from the rest of the market.
And so, mm-hmm. What are you going to say, Kit?
Yeah. I just wanted to ask a bit more because obviously, you know, Sammy, sounds like you've thought a lot about this, especially through the institutional lens. So just to kind of like, you know, bust some myths here from the institutional side, like, are these, you know, really, really legacy shops? Are they kind of open to the whole crypto culture side of things and how like things are Anon or, you know, previously you were redacted cartel, maybe they weren't super friendly with that, you know, the nomenclature, and like, how are they kind of adopting around that element of DeFi?
Yeah, there's a bit to unpack there. So 85% to 90% of the reason that we changed the name was because a lot of the LPs and people that are helping us set up the fund recognize what a ridiculous name we had. And the redacted name is dope. Obviously, it's very crypto native.
Yep.
And I talked about this a bit on my Twitter, but, you know, beyond the fact that this opportunity came down upon us, being so crypto native is exhausting. It's exhausting. It's very value extractive. It's everything you don't want in a startup. And I love the crypto native side of things, and I want to obviously make the most of it because it is what is the main determining factor on if you are a good project or not, at least from the social/marketing aspect of things. But the truth of the matter is that when you get to a certain size, or you reach a certain maturity in your protocol, you have to expand your horizon a bit, right? And I think a lot of projects, they never really get the same opportunity. One, because their time horizon is too small. And two, because a lot of projects start really big with a huge grand idea that's going to bring, you know, DeFi to the masses. And then they keep on honing in and honing in and honing in. Until they get to this very niche offering, which works for, you know, their 10 to 20 LPs, right? Whereas with us, I think we always started small in terms of something that we knew was a small pond, which we could come in, be the dominating player in the market. And we did that with Hidden Hand, with PXCVX, with the products that we were putting out. And we were able to build up a resume of successful launches with no misappropriation or any of these other things, which was able to like get us into a spot where we could go to the institutions who need, like, you know, a project that's been around for 2 years plus at the least, right? To say like, you know, this is our reputation. This is what we're known for. This is our track record. And this is what we want to build with you guys, right? And I think you're seeing that now with the ETFs, right? Obviously, we mm-hmm. were lucky enough, Nomura Group and Laser Digital, that's like a group we've been working really closely with for a long time now. And we have the opportunity to offer this product at the...
And so what is this product? Yeah.
Wait, hold on. I just want to say one last thing.
Okay, hold the sticks, bro.
Sammy just slid it in there, but for those who don't know, Nomura is a $400 billion, let me say that again, $400 billion AUM legacy corporation in TradFi. Massive, massive brand name, extremely respected in the space, right? All right, so but Sammy just snuck it in there, and they're obviously working with them. So please, what are you doing with them?
Right. So so our ETH yielding product, PX ETH, has been on the market now for 6 months. Obviously, we've been developing this product alongside them since the inception, and it had to be live on mainnet for a while before we could get this out there. PX ETH has been on the market now for 6 months plus, maybe, or maybe just shy of 6 months. And, you know, we've pulled in just shy of 50 million in TVL. We've been the highest yielding LST on the market with practically zero dependencies on any other protocol for the entirety of our lifespan. No restaking required, no additional risks on top of Lido required. Any risk that you could associate to STETH is what our risks are. Smart contract risk, all of these different things, right? And obviously that yield is powered by our two token model, which I'm sure we'll get into later. Our two token model, where PX ETH, essentially the junior tranche, is supplemented by our DeFi positions in Convex and Aura and a couple others. And the APX ETH, the senior tranche, is supported by all the Ethereum yield that enters this, all the Ethereum yield generated by the ETH that's in the system, right? I'm using a lot of TradFi terms now because that's what I've been telling LPs.
Nice.
And IPX ETH is the product that we're launching with Laser Digital. And what IPX ETH is it's, in simple terms, an income fund that will be available to majority of the brokers and RIAs and all the different institutions out there that's structured and offered by, you know, their parent company, Nomura Group, with all the validator services being run by Galaxy Digital, which is another huge TradFi firm, but more in the... Wow. More crypto focused, obviously, than them. And what we're essentially offering is a staked Ether income fund alternative to the spot Ether ETFs that just launched, right? So the spot Ether ETFs are out. Anyone can subscribe and you're trading spot Ether. Whereas with us, we can offer a product that's yielding 5% as of right now, you know, like 9% plus yield in pure Ethereum to any market participants who's looking for that yield.
So Sammy, question about IPX ETH. Does it also operate on a two token model, just like PX ETH and APX ETH?
We have other institutional products that will roll out that will capture the PX ETH side of things. But IPX ETH is the institutional wrapper, you can say, for APX ETH.
Understood.
And so can you describe some of the differences? And like, is the IPX ETH basically siloed because it's institutional grade only?
So what is it? Yeah. So what does it look like from the technical perspective?
Yeah.
IPX ETH is if you boil it down or you read between the lines of what it is, it's a KYC separation from the retail product, right? It is the same. IPX ETH is collateralized 100% by APX ETH. So $1 in IPX ETH equals $1 in ETH TVL for Dinero. All the fees that are generated by IPX ETH, like for example, our yield fee, still go back to the Dinero holders, just like any other product we put out. The only difference is we have Galaxy operating the validators here, and the yield and validator set and collateral is segregated from the rest of the system. Right, that's really all you need to create like an institutional wrapper. As long as every component of the system, so the validators, which is the collateral, and the yield that's generated from it being separated from the rest of the system, then you have a segregated market. And if everyone on the other side of the market is KYC'd within their own system, then that is eligible in this case to, you know, operate as one of these income funds.
Yeah. And sorry, Dave, I just want to ask a clarifying question is, how does the flow of funds work? Like, do you pre-buy the ETH so that there's like, obviously you got to seed it with something. And then like, as every additional, I guess, share of this income product is sold, or is it like an individual income product per user that's like kind of custom to that user, or is it like a publicly traded thing? Could you kind of share a bit about that?
Yeah. So right now, through the PXC smart contracts, a dollar of ETH comes in. It sits in the system as a 32 ETH balance builds up. That balance is staked with our validator. In this case, your mom and dad calls their local broker, tells them they want to subscribe to this fund. They wire over the euros or whatever the eligible currency it is. That is routed to Laser Digital, which is the crypto arm of Nomura Group. And they have their obviously own private counterparties for sourcing the ETH itself. Okay. When an ETH deposit from the Laser address comes in, that's recognized by the system. The segregation begins from there. And their ETH gets piled up and sent to the Galaxy validators. Ours are, you know, set with the retail validators.
Got it. Okay, that's very clear.
In that process where the ETH comes in from a white labeled address, the ETH still enters the PX ETH system. It is still staked like any other deposit would be on the website you can use right now.
Oh, so in that case, if somebody were to like, you know, redeem, since PX ETH and ETH is redeemable one for one, does it kind of commingle the KYC ETH with the non-KYC ETH?
So that's what, that, again, because it's a segregated validator set, redemptions that come through the fund are also segregated because they have their own sort of siphoned off portion of the TVL from the rest of the system, and their validators are the ones that exit the queue and the ETH leaves the system again, right?
Gotcha.
So at no point are funds crossed over.
So same protocol, different validators. It's like everything's on ETH. It's like everything's with Dinero.
Exactly. Everything is Dinero, right?
It's all Dinero.
Everything is, it's all PXC.
Same, but different.
All I see is Dinero.
Yeah. Awesome.
Kit, were you going to say something?
No. I'm good. Go ahead, bro.
So, Sammy, since you've been in the works for this income fund for a while, I'm sure you've been talking to like different funds and different, you know, sophisticated investors and whatnot. What is the appetite you've seen for a product like APX ETH, and how does it compare to something like the ETH ETF? Are people aware that they can even get like a staked ETH product in an institutional fashion like this? And do you think there's a lot of interest for it?
Well, there's a lot of adoption funds that exist right now on the market, adoption funds, yield funds, where the typical investor can, prior to the ETFs, access these a similar
maybe not identical, but similar product, right? Where our product gets interesting is that people are exposed to that DeFi yield via APX ETH without having to actually play the DeFi markets, right? So as we transition into the restaking solutions and we have our curve pools and all of these different things that we're doing to boost the yield, APX ETH, like the rest of the system, actually exists alongside those products and is because so much of the market is playing that side, a lot of the yield comes over to APX ETH, right? And because of that, you know, we have a system now where for the past few months, we've been yielding 4 times, 5 times higher than, you know, your traditional validator, or even your Lido. And that's where a lot of, that's where we're actually seeing a lot of the interest with the LPs that are coming into this fund. Obviously, you know, I'd say it's actually like an even split between people that don't have ETH on their balance sheet versus people who do have ETH on their balance sheet. Some people only have Bitcoin on the balance sheet. Some people are, you know, what we call like cowboy capital, where they've already been playing these markets themselves. Some of them are more conservative. And what I noticed with the more conservative funds that are committed LPs is that it's very easy to go through a due diligence process and an IC process if you're a family office or a major trading conglomerate, whatever it is, if the rails to access the product that you want to invest in are familiar, right? If you are investing in a gold income fund or an oil income fund, they already know who to call for to signal interest. They know how that whole process works. They know what their insurance process is. They know all of these things, right? And really what we're doing here is we're creating a rail more than anything, right? Mm-hmm. I could go on and on about how the smart contracts are done and how this is all segregated and all of these different things. But the truth of the matter is that we're going to be the first product on the market which provides a rail to high-yielding staked ether, right? and that's what has made us so easy for us to go out into the market and raise money from different LPs to get this fund together. Because, you know, everyone else on the market is focused on other things. Let's just say that.
Got yeah. That's the key word, the familiar rails right there. Exactly, rails that they're used to buying commodities, like you were saying, like gold or oil. They can just call up their broker, and just as they would buy any of those products, they can now have exposure to high yielding staked ETH.
And you know, we're competitive on management fees. We're competitive on performance fees. That's like, that is, again, it's irrelevant in this case because the spot ether gives you access to spot ether, right? For a more long-termist that isn't trading the ether, but looking at it as a diversified yield opportunity, that's when it gets interesting, right?
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, just a comment. The word rail is synonymous with distribution.
Okay.
So Sammy and the team has been hard in the kitchen, just cooking up this distribution channel. And, you know, as Dave kind of eloquently gave you an example of what that flow would look like, it really is that easy for them to contact a client and just be like, hey, I'm already managing some of your money. I can move some of this money into this new bucket that we have, and everything is already figured out in the back end. Like, it truly is that way. I used to work at a private wealth management company, and it was literally like that. Whenever a new product is added to our offerings, then we're able to just contact the client and just move the money super duper easily. But if somebody were to come in brand new with a new fund or a new anything, and we have to like plug in, oh man, it was almost like a non-starter. So like really nailing down this rail system
is really
critical.
And I'll add on to that also, you know, this fund isn't some new like venture fund that Xerox Sammy is raising for, which, you know, has some like BVI feeder fund and all this random stuff, right? This is a Nomura fund. Like you said, 400 billion assets under management. This is something that people are very familiar with. And
yep,
you know, the numbers sort of speak for themselves.
100%. And I do wanted to add on to, like, you know, the whole reception and appetite thing is, like, when they were kind of assessing, obviously you weren't the only one. You said there are many others focusing on other verticals, but I'm sure there are also those who are kind of coming after this market. Like, what would you say that kind of made Dinero, you know, then Redacted, kind of stood out? Like, was it the tech? Was it the
experience?
The Lindiness? Or was it the experience? You know, Sammy is charming AF. Dave is charming AF. So, you know, that's kind of got it through. Or, like, what would you say was, like, the number one thing that they cared about?
Well, what I meant by people are focusing on other things is that I think there's an over-indexing happening right now on restaking when everyone knows that AVS yield will not be as attractive as people think it is. I think there's an over-indexing on layer twos as well. I think a lot of people think that is the solution to that word you said before, distribution. And there's a bunch of other things. For us, you know, we thought that was exclusively going to be the stablecoin product. And we've realized as we've been building this that it's not another crypto product. It's a diversification away from it to get to where we want to get to, which is a true crypto native product, right? And the second part of what you were saying, I think that with us specifically, I'd be lying if I'd say it wasn't okay. With TradFi firms, I think there's like a big aspect of trust that goes into it. And a lot of these things fall through because it actually is irrelevant how much you trust the person or product running it because it is an autonomous system, right? Mm-hmm. There's only so much that Dave's pretty face can do because they're not actually giving their money to me or Dave. They're putting their money into a smart contract, right? And right. I talked about this a bit in the beginning when I said when I was mentioning time horizons, right? Because we're suited for the long term runway wise and vision wise, and also been doing this for, you know, 2 years plus, I think we were the best option because of what we wanted to do in terms of that expansion, and also because of how long we've been doing it, right? Even if the ETH product is only 6 months old. Yeah,
I think the key what you said here is it wasn't just creating another crypto product in the crypto space, whether it was restaking or L2s or something else. It was creating a rail in a whole new vertical where no one has touched yet before. And that is how we got IPX ETH. It's kind of just like taking a step back, looking at like, okay, like what do we need to do to get where we want to go? And this is basically how IPX ETH came about.
Yeah. And also just from a market color perspective, it goes back to that left curve, right curve thing, right? There's an institutional bid and there's a retail bid, right? And the retail bid is on memes and the institutional bid is on institutional grade assets, right? Which one do you want to align yourself with? Which pill do you want to take? And for us, we had the opportunity to go down that path where we can set ourselves up to onboard that institutional capital. And this is the vehicle to do it. And now is the time to do it with the ETH ETF and the Bitcoin ETF going so well. And I think you're seeing it in, some other verticals that are not Bitcoin ETH. I think the RWAs are RWAs are picking up a lot of traffic as well. And or even, you know, some of the more centralized stablecoins, the Athenas of the world and stuff. And I think that that's generally where the liquidity that is less toxic is, right? If I'm building a product and I know that it's going to take a lot of bootstrapping to get that product where I want it to be, what kind of capital do you want to align yourselves with? And there's a reason that funds are structured the way they are with lockups and everything. And incentives are just aligned right now, you know, internally and also with the LPs that are coming in here. with our token holders, all of these different things. Incentives are just aligned right now, right? I don't feel like this is a product where I'm coming out and I'm saying, you know what, like people like the idea, sure, but it's going to take $20 million in incentives to get the curve pool going and get this going and get that going. And I'm going to have to pay fucking whatever Oracle to, like, you know, like set up the support, and I have to back channel with all these guys. Like, there's alignment right now, right? And I think that when you think about the two products that every crypto project is, the two products are the token and the platform, right? people often like confuse the two as the same things when everyone knows, even if they don't want to recognize it, that they're not. And they treat the platform the same way that they treat the token, in the sense that the way to grow your token is to do a lot of shady things with market makers and exchanges and all of these different things. And there's an illusion that to grow the product, it's the same thing. But the problem is that everyone is selling the product to the same people they're selling the token to, right? Which are two completely different user groups, right? And that's why there's a focus on Rails right now internally. Rails with big layer two partners, layer one partners, TradFi partners, all of these different groups where we can have a more concentrated set of stakeholders in terms of the success of the product, where we can address their exact needs and access, you know, hundreds of millions, if not in the case of this IPXE product, billions of dollars. That's completely separated from the capital that we know we need to attract on the token side, right?
Got it. All right. You know, we're kind of halfway through the pod here, and you know, obviously Dave is with the team Dinero, so you know I'm gonna come in and ask some of the harder ball questions just to kind of balance this pod out a little bit. Okay. So Sammy, you mentioned earlier about onboarding the right capital, and I think it's absolutely makes sense that this is going to be like a more fund structure. It's not going to be, you know, publicly traded. And but with that, though, it's going to come a little bit more high touch, right? There's going to be an education element to it. There's going to be a pitching and a sales element to it. Have you talked with Nomura, or have they asked you guys or Laser Digital on how to kind of like position it? What does the pitch sound like? Like, you know,
I mean, you were talking about tranches before.
So I can sell it to my mom, you know, tell me how you would sell to my mom.
So the great part is that I am actually not a licensed broker, and I do not have the ability to sell anyone on entering the fund, which actually works out for the better, because whenever someone wants to enter the fund, they're dealing with their sales team of hundreds of people, whatever, that are licensed to get people to, invest in the fund, right? So, you know, the greatest part of all of this, which is a great question, the greatest part of all of this is that I don't have to, you know, make a tweet on Twitter and say, hey, there's like 10% APY here, and just hope that some, you know, LP sees it and deposits into it. Because I know that this is a product that someone is building on top of PXE and Dinero as a whole. And they're putting their resources behind getting that in front of the right LPs, right? Obviously, I'm not the person to go and, you know, go sell a million different family offices and all of these different things on it. Yes, I've learned the lingo, and that's where I get the junior tranche, senior tranche from. But we can still all internally still focus on Dinero, scaling our products, getting new stuff out the door. And now we just have this whole new avenue and this whole new like sales team behind us, which is completely separated, which is focused on this exclusively, right? So for us, it's not even something where we have to grow the team exponentially as more capital comes in the door, because we have, you know, a decade old sort of investment bank behind it, right? That will be pushing it because of their best interests.
Right. And I'm sure they have a ironclad sales system on how to stop every objection. Like, hey, isn't why wouldn't I just do it on Steth? Well, you know, you can't do Steth because it's not hooked up to all our brokerages. Well, you know what? Why can't I go use the ETF? Well, you don't want to use the ETF because it's just a vanilla ETF. You're not going to get yield. So I'm sure they have like a full blown sales system, because the reason why I bring it up is, like I said, from my private wealth management days, there's always a sales representative from, like, you know, Vanguard or AXA or like any of these guys to come in, and they would literally educate us on how to sell this new annuity or this new fund or this new whatever they have. And they're like clear talking points. Then they would also give us, these are some of the usual objections that we hear and how you answer these objections. So like financial services, and it's particularly financial sales and financial services, are a really well documented and proceduralized process. So yeah. I'm kind of familiar with that.
Something that I don't, I have Dave. So
like I said, the charm offensive. Yeah. All right, Sammy, yeah. Follow up to that though, in order for them to be motivated to sales and put all of their resources behind it, what are the economics behind here? Like, what does the fee share look like? How does Dinero benefit? What, you know, all of that good stuff.
Well, I'm not allowed to disclose.
Oh,
let me check.
Reads NDA.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. I'm not allowed to disclose the fund sales process, but the yield fee. So like I was saying earlier, if you were to deposit $1 on PXETH right now, we take a 10% yield fee, I believe, on all the ETH yield that was generated while you were in that product. It doesn't matter if you are one of the new institutional users, if you're the same retail user, if you're a layer two, it doesn't matter who you are. That fee is still recognized, and that is the main value, that is the main revenue driver for this product, right? For PXETH. It doesn't matter what avenue we sell it from. If that same dollar you deposited came from your local broker, that yield fee would still be recognized and brought back to the treasury for distribution or OPEX, whatever it is, right? So, you know, every product we've ever put out in Redacted's history, in Dinero's future, any of these things, always there's a kickback that goes back to our stakers and lockers who participate in governance. And that's not going to change even with an institutional focus. We had to jump through fucking a million hula hoops to make it happen, but here we are.
Let's go.
That's awesome to hear. And obviously on their end, they charge a spread on top of that, because you mentioned there was management fee and also a carry fee, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. So a management fee is taken on the capital that exists in the fund every year. That's obviously meant to uphold legal and operation expenses and all these different things. withdraw fees in this case will be with Galaxy to make sure that they're not losing money on the validator operation itself. And the carry fee is like, I'm not able to disclose it.
Okay. I guess I just have to go and LP into this fund and read the docs. Okay.
But cool. In terms of a general structure, right? That's how it works.
Yeah. I got you. And then last and final questions on me about this specific product, then we can move on to like, what does the future hold? Is with the, you know, PXETH, APXETH model, the reason why you're able to get a boosted yield on APXETH is because some of that PXETH is used elsewhere in DeFi, right? So there's, you know, a natural boost onto the APXETH that is there. But for this IPXETH structure, every single PXETH that goes in is going to be an APXETH. So then where would you get that, you know, added boost per se?
Right. So like I said before, it's a wrapper on APXETH as a whole, right? and if I understand the question, the question is, if there's an institutional level flow coming into APXETH, does that not dilute APXETH down to the rest of the market, despite what might happen on the PXETH side, unless retail matches the PXETH side? And the answer to that question is, that's where we lean on some of the other scaling efforts that we see the rest of the market doing. So one effort that we have going on right now with some of the restaking partners that's coming out is all of the Ether that enters the system will not only be staked, but it'll be restaked on the back end, not through the UI, right? So right now, as a user, you mint whatever SFRX ETH or STETH or RATH or whatever, and you restake it. And with us, what would be happening is that once an Ether enters the system, it's staked and automatically restaked. And the abstraction of yield there would be all the restaking yield, like all the DeFi yield, would be focused towards PX ETH, which is what just what retail wants right now. That's just what the market is. You know, if you look at DeFi Llama, that's just what the market wants. So we continue to provide those yields to the PX ETH holders, where the APX ETH holder is more focused, like a senior tranche, on like, you know, more conservative yield.
Right, right. And they just sit there. And well, the clarification then for me is that as if every single dollar of PX ETH or IPX ETH that's going to come in is basically just a wrapper of APX ETH, then wouldn't the global rewards of APX ETH that's distributed to both the APX ETH retail and also IPX ETH kind of commingled? Or are they still completely separated?
It's still separate validators.
Yeah. So the yield distribution happens on a different level than where the yield is actually generated from, right? In a single token model, you would generate the yield, and then that yield would be distributed to the same token, no matter what token you're holding. Here, what you have is three tokens, right? PX ETH, APX ETH, IPX ETH, right? And then the yield that's generated, the APX ETH, is split amongst IPX ETH and APX ETH holders based on the validator ratio.
Got it. Okay. And then obviously with IPX ETH, like you said, you're going to take that ETH and put it into like restaking and other yield opportunities.
The PX ETH, exactly. So that we can continue to generate more like avenues of yield for PX ETH itself. Yeah.
Right, on both. So let me just make sure I get it correctly. Every flow that comes in from IPX ETH, right, obviously has to go through PX ETH, then it gets into APX ETH. Once it's in APX ETH, though, all that ETH in there is going to then put into restaking and other areas for yield. But the yield that is generated from that is going to be put towards bribes or, you know, emissions or any other incentive for PX ETH, so that more and more PX ETH would stay PX ETH and not go into the APX ETH vault. That way, the native yield of just straight up ETH would naturally increase.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Nice.
It's good. I think I did my job here. Yeah. I don't know about you guys.
I wanted to move on to, I actually have two questions I want to move on to. One is, we just had the Dinero rebrand of Redacted into Dinero, which included a token migration of Butterfly to Dinero. I want to go over the details of that. And then after, I want to go over, we have institutions right curve, and then we have a left curve strategy for PXE. I want to get into that. But first, Dinero migration, like, what's going on there?
Yeah, so like I said, we had to be a bit more grown up, a bit more like adults, and we had to change the name, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I know everyone's upset about it, but the butterfly lives on through the PX ETH product, which is what we spend majority of our time on anyways, right? Mm-hmm. And depending on when we post this, you can see that the brand lives on through the video. And the migration itself, right, while it is something that had to be done from a growth perspective, is relatively simple. You can go to dinero.xyz now. If you're a butterfly holder, you can migrate one butterfly for 2,000 dinero. There's a bit of a token split in there. Mm-hmm. we've deprecated the RL butterfly locking mechanism we had for a better liquidity profile, let's say, because the RL butterfly system was holding us back in terms of, you know, volume and venues, mm-hmm. we could trade on and all of these different things, right? The single site staking model is what's replacing it. So Estonero. Estonero looks like what all your favorite tokens from today look like. Stake the tokens, unstake them, the yield is distributed, both in terms of inflation and in terms of revenue that's generated from the product as an incentive for participating in governance. And to the user, the everything else stays the same. The fees split that exists with Redacted stays in place. And that's the majority of it, right? So the token split and the deprecation of RL for S.
S tier.
S tier.
Yeah. And so, and now, okay, you can go ahead, do that. 1 to 2,000. We love the redenomination. And then now I want to get to, okay, right curve, institutional, left. What's the left curve retail strategy for distribution of PXE far and wide?
Can we pause there for a sec?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the L2 stuff?
A few moments later.
All right. Well, welcome back. So we're just going to move on to the next question there. We're going to save that for another time. So what's next on the Dinero roadmap? I remember when we last had you on, you're basically hinting at a stablecoin, but you didn't say the stablecoin. How far out is now PXUSD? And like, is that like what's next on the roadmap? Like, what should be people be looking for?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, it's not far, right? I think that the stablecoin sector right now, especially the decentralized stablecoin space, is due for some innovation. And we have a lot of ideas there. but for us, PXUSD acts as a form of native leverage on PXETH, right? And in order for us to have a big market there where you can borrow against IPXETH, borrow against APXETH, PXETH LPs on DeFi, all of these different things, we need to increase the market cap of PXETH to where it's obviously very safe collateral, something you would see on Aave, which I hope happens soon. And
Mark, please. You know,
otherwise, we're just not, you know, offering a safe form of collateral. And you can go borrow against PXETH and APXETH today on, you know, over 5-10 different places, whether it's a money market or some perps protocol or some stablecoin. but their systems are going to be designed just different than how our system is designed, where we have a sole form of collateral rather than, you know, multi-collateral. So all that to say that through all these different like scaling efforts that we're putting out there on the retail side, on the institutional side, PXETH slowly but surely, or rather not the slowly part, surely we'll reach a stage where, you know, it is the dream collateral for a stablecoin.
Swiftly and surely. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so, what's the Dinero end game in a few years? All right, we got yield base plate of Ethereum. A few years out, what does that look like?
What does that look like? It looks like more than just, you know, right now what it is after this call, you can summarize it as, you know, there's this retail product, PXE, that can go deposit on it. I can go do some cool stuff on DeFi. And there's also this institutional product, right? And the institutional product to us is just the start of like what the whole vision is. Right. I want us in like 2-3 years, I want you guys to be using different native ETH yield solutions, whether it's on layer twos or through your mom and dad's broker or using it on DeFi or using a stablecoin or any of these things, using that yield base plate without even knowing that you're in one of our products. Right. I think everyone is like putting a lot of time and effort onto this on the account abstraction side and stuff like that. But for us, it's really that yield abstraction to where, you know, you have a million different products all built on top of this one thing, and you can use whatever fits your risk profile without having to depend on, you know, one singular source of like one singular offering, right?
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Very cool.
Wait, did you have another question?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
I wanted to get into what Bearchain, because obviously you're working that as well. And I'm curious, like, what excites you the most in the Bearchain ecosystem? Because we've been covering Bearchain at Flywheel since 2022, ever since 0xD24 mentioned them. And I'm curious, you know, you're part of Build-A-Bearer, like, what projects are you most excited about coming on Bearchain in the near future when they launch?
I think, like, I don't have to make the shell on...
I know what you can say.
No, I think I don't have to do the shell on BGT and why that's such, like, a powerful mechanic for a layer mm-hmm. one
yeah.
anymore, right? I think everyone yep. has heard that story a million times, and it's drilled in people's heads, right? All I would be doing is rephrasing it, right? Actually, the most exciting thing to me on Bearchain right now is, like, the consumer use cases. I was never much of a consumer bull. I've always been more of a DeFi bull. And I think because of the, you know, liquidity that's been generated that hasn't even been generated yet, both in terms of just, like, people building on top of the chain and the community that's been, like, built on Bearchain, I think that the most exciting thing is, like, the consumer focused applications that are seeing that community come and building on top of it, to where there's stuff being built on Bearchain that doesn't exist on any other chain, right? One of the projects that went through Build-A-Bear, like Puffpaw, was built by these guys. It sounds ridiculous, right? But it's these guys that have been in the vape industry for, like, 6 years now, identify the X to earn sort of, like, growth strategy or go-to-market strategy that worked for a lot of crypto projects, and is applying that to help people quit smoking. another one is, like, Over Under, which adds, like, this really unique, like, crypto twist to streaming on, like, Twitch and Kick and YouTube streams and all of that sort of stuff. I'm seeing a lot of, like, handheld, like, sort of DPIN projects coming out, and a lot of people that don't even care about proof of liquidity, which is crazy to say because Bearchain's whole, like, edge is proof of liquidity. But the ripples that, like, come about, like, in this era where, you know, Bearchain's not even live yet, so it's weird to say it like that, but, like, these ripples that are coming because of the excitement of proof of liquidity are, like, what interests me the most right now, where we were seeing some, like, really unique cases of just, like, blockchain and crypto as a whole, irrelevant of, you know, whatever the liquidity strategy is for a chain, right?
It's like the liquidity bequeaths all of these consumer apps to exist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. No, I met the Puffall people and a few of the projects out in Brussels. And I have to say, like, I wrote this in my tweet summarizing Brussels, like, all the Bearchain events were just, you know, pretty electric. They're absolutely electric. Like, tons of people at Bear Academy. All the parties were fun. Like, lots of interest there. And it was like that in Denver too. So, you know, and all this before launch. So exciting stuff there. And I think that, like, wraps it up. That's all I wanted to cover here. Just, you know, get IPX ETH, get the news out and about, get the updates about Dinero, and of course, like, got thrown a little Bearchain in there. So Sammy, before we go, now we ask all our guests one question. And that one question is, who do you want to see as a guest? Who do you want to see on Flywheel?
You're going to make me pull up the YouTube to see who you've already had.
No, just say
it's
it.
Okay, you can say it again.
You can say it again. We'll correct you.
Who's someone I want to see on Flywheel? you should get the Nomura songs. Guys.
Yep, that would be sick. Oh. You think they'd become, they were down? Yeah, do you think they'd come on?
Yeah, they love this stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the Nomura guys on. Let's do it.
Like, the laser guys specifically, they love
Laser guys. Yeah, let's get them on.
I like that.
It would be interesting to hear them say, like, the same thing I said, just in their words.
In their words, yeah. And Kit can really talk to them
to see, like, the contrast.
I'll just be like sitting on the side. It'll be like the Infinity Pools interview when I was just literally, like, quiet the whole time. I'm just like, yeah. Yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, that'd be a funny one. Okay. Yeah. Well, Sammy, man, thank you so much.
What, What are the new handles? Because now there's new social media handles for Dinero. So let's get over those. Yeah.
So the Twitter changed from @redactedcartel to @Dinero_XYZ. Dinero obviously means money in Spanish, like a slang term for saying money in Spanish. And if you go to the Twitter, you can click on the link tree, and there has all the official links, the official website, Dinero.XYZ. The Discord link, all of those new fun things. So everything's on the new Twitter, and that should sort of be that's the main place we communicate from anyway. So you'll find everything you need there.
All right, cool. Sammy, thanks so much for coming on. Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you, friends.
Thank you, sir. How soon?
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the post game. I'm your host, DeFi Dave. Here, as always, balancing me out, it's Capital K. This time around, we had on Sammy again from Dinero, talking IPX ETH, Dinero migration, and more on this episode. Kit, what are your thoughts on this?
Okay, so first of all, for those that listen to the whole thing, obviously you guys know that Dave is definitely part of the whole Dinero.
I am part of the Dinero team. Yeah.
So yeah. He is literally partial to this. So I had to come in, and I noticed that the show was getting on a little bit more like a PR piece. So I was like, no, not on my watch. I'm going to come in and balance out my man here. And hopefully I was able to ask a lot of hard questions for you guys, and you guys can understand the product, the structure a bit better. But just to dive in here for the post game, I want to share one story real quick. I met Sammy way back in Portugal in like 2022, like literally before Redacted was launched. He brought me to the Hacker House in Portugal, Lisboa. And
Is this LizCon in 2021?
Yeah, this was like way ago. And then he was like, he showed me this little Figma file with two words, Redacted Cartel. And it was pieced together at like a serial killer font style with just like, you know, letters from a magazine. And I saw it as like a Figma file, and he was explaining to me the concept and what he was going to do. And I was like, oh, dude, that's super cool. And then fast forward to like, you know, 2+ years later, like here we are with the rebranding of Dinero. And it's just so cool to see like a builder, like he said, like stick it through, show that they have traction, show that they are long-term thinking. And that's what the, you know, institutionals want and to be most receptive about. It's not the tech. Yeah. It's not the vibe. It's not how good looking you are. Right?
It's about the distribution.
It actually comes down to like, you know, your track record and kind of where you see yourself.
I can't use these looks, unfortunately, as Kit.
No, bro. Put it back. But yeah, that was my take on it. What was yours, Dave?
I mean, I've known about this for a while. Before I joined Redacted Dinero. Sammy told me this idea, and once I had the vision, especially like think about how much we talked about distribution over the past year, Kit, and like thinking like where those distribution inflows came from, and I kind of just had this like light bulb moment, both at like I said in the show at ETH Denver, like damn, like the institutions are coming, but how will they come? DeFi is growing up, how will it grow up? And once I heard the whole IPX ETH pitch, I'm like, okay, there's like something here. This is a unique direction that I don't see any other crypto protocol building in, and I want to be a part of it. Hence how I hopped on and joined, and why this pod ended up the way it was. Cause I am excited about it. I think it's a really interesting opportunity. You know, it's like our seat at the table. It's like our time, like stepping up, like bringing like Dinero, Pyrex. It's the same protocol, just different validators.
Right. You're just taking off the hacker t-shirt and putting on the nice little, you know, button up to be some business smashual.
I look good in a suit. I don't know what you're talking about.
but to add a bit more to the color here is like, I love what Sammy has said about Rails and, you know, how you can reiterate that. Don't think people appreciate how truly important that is. Like, it is a difference between, like I said, from my PWM experience, is like, it's easy as picking up a phone, calling the custodian to literally just basically move money from the left pocket into the right pocket. And it was like, they can just do it within the day, paperwork done. But if you were to do it from even going cross broker, would take time for the money to like wire across and all for all the securities to move across. Like there is a lot of friction, and by being embedded in the flow, it just makes things like 10x, like 100x easier actually. But what is more important though, is this is just the first product. I don't know if you guys caught it, but Sammy kind of leaked a little bit there. He was like, you know, for this iteration, it's just IPX ETH. But then he says in the next one, there's like some PX ETH, IPX ETH combination.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So yeah, it's big.
I have no idea.
By Sammy, so I can say it because he said it. All right, on the pod. But anyways, I'm excited to see what is to come. You know, aside from just PX USD, I feel like, you know, another stable coin, great, awesome. But like, I want to see what you guys are going to keep on doing with this institutional distribution channel.
Yeah, I mean, the best is yet to come. And it was funny. This has nothing to do with the podcast or anything, but in the town I grew up in, there's a restaurant called Rails. It's a steakhouse. It's a delicious it's an awesome steakhouse out in Tewaco, New Jersey. I highly recommend going. Steak Teeth. It's really good. They have really good steak. I'm telling you, like, if anybody ever is like going through North Jersey, check out Rails Steakhouse. And I just kept on getting flashbacks to Rails.
Okay. All right. Well, since you kind of went off track a little bit, I'm going to go off track too and speculate. Here is like the first institutional meme coin by Dinero is going to be Mucho.
Mucho. Institutional meme coin. What are we talking about here? Oh, whitelisted.
Exactly.
I thought you were going to call it Rails.
I thought Mucho was going to be such a fun meme coin that is connected to the narrow. You know?
Yeah. One can speculate.
Just me then.
Yeah. Anyways, right. We'll end it at that. Everybody, thank you for watching, listening, wherever you are. If this is your first time being a part of this, make sure you go ahead, give us a like, hit that bell button, you subscribe, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Make sure to follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at FlywheelDeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DefiDay22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.